I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, and welcome to the Modern Australian Underground podcast. I'm your host, Christina Papp. I'm breaking up the routine a bit. Instead of the radio show today, I'll be bringing you another interview. I'm doing a bit of an overhaul of the schedule at the moment, in which I'm planning on doing more interviews, but still having a radio show episode once a month. I know it's also been all Melbourne conversations, but I'm working on branching out of state, so bear with me. But on the show today, I'll be talking to Al Montfort and Amy Hill, who currently do Sleeper and Snake together, as well as playing in Terry and Constant Mongrel, plus a slew of other bands across a vast variety of underground genres they've done separately over the years, including Primo, UV Race, Dick Diver, Lower Plenty, East Link, Total Control, School of Radiant Living, Straightjacket Nation, and the list goes on. I don't specifically remember when I met Amy or Al. I think with both of them, it was just a matter of becoming familiar with each other over time from seeing each other at shows. I'd been going to Straightjacket Nation shows since maybe 2007, with UV Race following shortly after that, and we talked through that time period, as well as when they started getting into music, moving to Melbourne, plus how they met and how music has played such a large role since it entered their lives, plus a whole bunch of fun stories thrown in for a good laugh along the way. Sleeper and Snake's first album, Junction and High, was released in 2019 off Art Records. It was followed the next year by their Fresco Shed LP, released by both Upset the Rhythm in the UK and Melbourne's LSD Club. This is their song Flats, right here on the Modern Australian Underground.
The weight of the light, the weight of the
why do you make music?
Hmm.
I don't know if I ever asked myself that question in the beginning. It just was fun, I guess. I don't know. You learned at school a bit.
Yeah.
To play music because you were so into bands and stuff.
So, wait, I love bands.
Mm.
but the I think it's pretty fun. Good way to socialize. Also a good way to be creative. Yeah, creativity rocks. No, I don't know. Don't know why I make music.
I think definitely for me it was fun. Like the first band I was in was with like two close friends who also couldn't really play music. Roberta could play guitar. Mel she worked in like a prop shop and she used to just get like a weird sound making device from the prop shop and that would be hers for the gig. And I was supposed to be the drummer, but
a weird sound making device
like once she had like a violin that was like broken and just pretended to play it.
Yeah, yeah.
Things like that. We were called the Sexual Emotions. It was a really bad
That's a sick name.
But yeah, like so we were just literally like three drunks having a good time. Mm. We're probably very hated in Auckland music scene.
You got did you get rated highly in some zine? Some Kiwi zine?
Yeah, I think that must have just been a bit of a joke though.
Kiwi.
It was like
zine.
Best bands in Auckland of like a certain era and it was like us and then Die Die Die, who obviously like take themselves quite seriously. So I think they were a bit outraged. But friends of us, so doesn't matter, does it?
How long ago was that pre-School of Radiant Living?
That was in Auckland.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I met Harriet in Auckland, who was Roberta's sister. And we started Sleepless Nights, which is like our country band. Again, also couldn't really play country music, but we really tried. And then Harriet and I both moved to Melbourne and we kept doing that band. And then that turned into Radiant Living when Georgia and Marion joined. Yeah, there was some pretty odd times for Radiant Living, that's for sure. We used to like dress up and, yeah, on a bit of a hippie kind of vibe as well, which now I'm just like, oh, maybe.
So you went from country to hippie.
You were a cult, I think.
Yeah, that was the kind of thing, wasn't it? Like beads and stuff. Very odd.
Pretty fun.
Is that how you met Amy when she was wearing beads?
Yeah, I was like, beads.
I'm in.
You had me at beads. That's what I said. No, but that's when we met. Yeah.
Wait, you met when you were doing School of Radiant Living?
Yeah, through Georgia.
Did you come to a gig?
Yeah.
And then there was the bus trip, UV race to Geelong, and I came on that.
We rented a double-decker bus. We had a gig in Geelong. It was like before like bands were playing Geelong really often, like Melbourne bands, before Melbourne bands were playing Geelong quite often.
Mm.
And we were like, well, nobody's going to come see us in Geelong.
Yeah.
Like, is there even a scene in Geelong? We just didn't know.
This was pre like you knew Billy or like the Living Eyes.
Yeah, we would have just met maybe Jake.
Yeah.
So this is probably 11 years. This is 11 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And we just were like, cool, let's hire a double-decker bus and we'll bring everybody, it was a party bus, and we brought everybody down from Melbourne. So there was like 60 people on the bus and I think there was like 63 payers.
And yeah. Because did we pay for our ticket that was the bus and the show or something? Yeah.
Before all this, being in New Zealand, like talking about getting into music, do you remember like buying your first record and like kind of the story around how that happened?
I had tapes, my first record, because I have two older sisters, so I probably kind of listened to music that they were into, which was kind of like a weird mix growing up, like Prodigy. We'd get tapes that we'd listen to in the car over and over, and Prodigy was one. Middle sister was really into like Morrissey and the Smiths and stuff. I had a real big Michael Jackson Dangerous period, and that's like my first tape, which I think I was like obsessed with. Oh, it's all such a strange
blur. What did your parents think about in the car when you're like cranking Morrissey and then the Prodigy?
And Dad's like Citroen DS7 or whatever. I don't know. I think they just were like, cool, whatever. he used to just like buy us like CDs and books for Christmas every year. So we'd get to choose a CD that we wanted.
Yeah.
Which was pretty good.
What did you choose?
Pulp Fiction soundtrack. Yeah. But yeah, and then I think when I kind of got into my teens and stuff, or was really into like grunge, then kind of got into more like rock and roll and punk and stuff. And then later than that, really into country music.
Mm.
So that was kind of the mix. Auckland in like kind of early 2000s, I think like a lot of my friends were kind of like art students and stuff. So it was that kind of vibe as well, that kind of alternative music. And there was different like nights that you'd go to, I'm trying to think what they're called, like Kiss and Makeup Club or something. You know, we'd go and there'd be like cute. A DJ who'd be playing like, God knows. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Really, like really fun.
Did they have bands as well?
There was always bands playing. Mm. Yeah, maybe not at that night, but there were like different venues where you go and see bands and then there'd be DJs and stuff.
Mm.
The Uge.
Who were playing? Coolies? Die? No, yeah. Was that too early?
I don't know if I could remember all the bands. I think I could probably only remember, yeah, like the Coolies and Die, because they used to play together all the time and we're friends.
Yeah.
So we pretty much just go to their gigs.
That's nice though. That's what it's kind of like in any scene though. It's like there's always
just go out to see your mates.
Yeah, yeah. What about you, Al? Do you remember?
What
record?
I can't remember if I got an E17 CD single or Digging On You by
TLC.
Oh, I can't remember what one of them is the first CD single, but I think Green Day, Dookie, or What's a Story in Morning Glory by Oasis was the first.
Right.
So I was more into Blur.
Blip, so.
Which I know is probably a controversial thing to say these days, but at the time I was
Why, what's
more
the deal
Blur.
With Blur?
Blur, cool. Eh?
Well, I think they were seen as like Oasis was kind of like the working class band and Blur were like the kind of toffee.
What was New Zealand missing that made you want to come over to Australia?
I don't think it was actually missing anything. It was just that Harriet moved here and she convinced me to go.
Yeah.
Because she wanted to have friends. And me and Mel were like, yeah, cool, we'll move to Melbourne. Like, it just seemed like a kind of fun thing to do. And then we came here and Mel left like quite quickly because she'd met the guy and in Auckland just before we left, classic. So she left and then I was just here and I just had to kind of work it out. Lived in like Abbotsford in this like rundown house with this hippie that just like drank red wine on the couch, like a cask. And there was like a stain of where he would like pour it. And so, you know, when you just like move into places because you just don't know what you're doing and you're like, have
no choice.
What about
Harriet though? Like, weren't you guys living together?
Well, she was living with her partner at the time and I really overstayed my welcome.
Right.
It was like a one bedroom flat and I was like on the couch. And then I moved and stayed with some other friends from New Zealand for a little while and also kind of overstayed my welcome with them. So I had to move in with the hippie.
So was School of Radiant Living the first band you did here then?
We did Sleepless Nights first. Yeah, which was just the two of us. And to be honest, like pretty weird gigs. Like we thought we were playing country music, but like in retrospect, it was pretty like, I would almost say like avant-garde.
I need to listen to this.
I don't know if we have any recordings. I had a computer that we did heaps of stuff on, but my house when I was living in Clifton Hill got robbed and lost that laptop, which had like all of our early stuff and like on it, which was a real bummer. But to be honest, maybe that was a good thing. There was like one gig that we did at the post office hotel. And for the life of me, I cannot really understand why we were decided that this was a good idea. Just like I was playing bass probably quite badly and Harriet was playing, what's the one that you blow into and it's got the keys? I can never remember what this is called.
Like, melodica.
Melodica.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And then like I was singing like in the, kind of like a cappella but with hardly any instrumentation, thinking that we were doing a country music set.
Hey, isn't country like punk? It's like whatever you make of it, right? You're like, yeah,
glad
sure.
you said that, yeah.
And the melodica might be like the Kiwi reggae influence of, you know. Yeah.
Well, Dane's certificate was just happened to be at that gig and he loved it. So, you know, must have been doing
props
something
from
right.
an original weirdo.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
And you
so
told
good.
Before, like, you were anything connected to the punk scene? Did you tell me that you played a party that Sean South had asked you to play at as well?
Yeah, we played. It ended up being in his kitchen, but maybe there was like a warehouse over the road from his house on Barclay Street? And they had, I don't know if they just like broke in illegally or they were allowed to go in there or if it was just anyway squatted or whatever. They tried to have a party there, but it ended up getting shut down and they turned off all the power and stuff. So we played, I actually don't know how we got that gig, to be honest. I think Harriet was friends with Harriet Morgan and Sean South.
That house. I remember that house long ago. It was a weird time.
But it was fun. Everyone would have been just so confused at what we were doing.
The Nihilistic Orbs country record that never yeah, was.
That'd I don't be good. Know if you would have really been able to hear anything. Maybe it just sounded like punk music because it was so blown out.
You're not from Melbourne either, are you?
No, I'm from Yarragon.
Where's Yarragon?
It's like near Latrobe Valley, kind of West Gippsland.
Born in Melbourne, though.
Right. Lived until I was 10, then moved there for the teenage years.
Was there a punk scene up there?
No. Yeah. There's a few kids from Maui into hardcore, and Marcus is from Warragul, and Moses. Also, so three of UV Race, yeah.
The only punks in Warragul?
Yeah.
Did you meet DX up there or was that a thing down here?
No, that was only through Straightjacket when we started. It was like.
It's interesting that you met him through Straightjacket and then you went on to do so many bands together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd seen The Plague before.
Oh, yeah.
And
what was that his first band?
Yeah, that was like Crime Think type. I think that was Straight Edge. It was like Straight Edge Annika, like kind of.
I've never heard that.
Yeah. They were really good, really aggressive.
What was his role? Was he the front person?
Yeah. Or? And lots of, I think were good political diatribes between songs.
Yeah, yeah.
I quite enjoyed it as a 16-year-old.
Where would you see them play?
I think I saw them at RMIT. Like there was a venue. It was like a room that people used to hire out and put on gigs.
Like a hall or something.
Like near Sin FM or something?
It was kind of near Sin FM. Right. It was like closer to Swanson Street.
Yeah.
Like between Sin FM and Swanson Street.
Who did you know to start Straightjacket then?
I think we just talked to Em and Dave at gigs. Yeah. I was going to hardcore gigs for a while. And then they were like, oh, we're starting a band. Do you play an instrument? I was like, I play bass. And like, sweet. We think we've got this singer in Wollongong, DX from
The Plague.
The Plague. We're like, cool.
Didn't the bass you play in Straightjacket only ever have three strings though?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Not much of the
high ones. Is there a reason for that?
Just it broke. So I guess I was on the dole for a really long time and then a student.
Is that
so
the one that allowance. Daniel Toomey has now?
Yeah, Daniel Toomey has it now. Xanthi had it for a while.
For Primo.
But I saved to buy a bass cab
on
the dole.
Right.
Pretty good. I'm pretty proud of that.
Can't do that these days.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I've had really cheap rent, $50 a week, granny flat shared with somebody else in Claydon. So I moved from Yarragon to Claydon, the big smoke.
And what year was this around? Like you moved to Melbourne, you started up Straightjacket. Because at that time, Dave and Emily were living at the Pink Palace, right?
Pink Palace, yeah. Right.
It's just cool because, like, I mean, just talking to Yup.
Yup, yeah.
And getting that part of the conversation is kind of cool to, like, build the scene at that time, just thinking about it.
Well, yeah, I'd come down, go to gigs at Pink Palace or, you know, wherever was holding all ages gigs at the time.
Yeah.
And then when I met Dave and Em, I'd just stay floor, or no, on their couch in the Pink Palace.
Yeah.
And that's where I met Yap and Timmy and Jimmy, everyone, Tristan, Sarah Haywood, who I'd play in Lower Plenty with later.
Yeah. Well, actually, speaking about houses and speaking about Lower Plenty, I was going to ask because there was that house that was on the cover of Hard Rubbish.
Mm.
And I remember, like, I think I only went there once or twice, but there used to be, like, shows there and stuff, and then everyone got evicted and I think it got demolished.
Yeah, it got demolished.
Were you living there?
Yeah. It was Tom Griggs of Falif Limit.
Yeah.
And the Focus.
Well, he lived at Pink Life. Palace as well.
Yeah. Mm. And that's where I met him as well. And I got recruited for the Focus.
Oh.
Well, I put my hand up. I loved them. They were such a good band. Right. But yeah, that house was Steph Kohler, Tom and myself. And there was like that also, speaking of cheap houses, it was crumbling. It was falling apart.
But it was a cool house though. And you had the little rehearsal room.
Yeah. I think it was $1,200 a month for four bedrooms and a little shack, which is a jam room.
In Brunswick too.
In Brunswick, yeah.
Three.
You're like around the corner from
A1. Oh, yeah. Yeah, three. So that was pretty good. But, yeah, we had so many rehearsals in that jam room that was there.
Yeah, and, I think I saw the UV Race play there. Did you have a lot of shows in the backyard?
I had a few. I think every time it was someone's birthday, we'd have a little party. But it wasn't, a lot of house parties. And, when we were.
There was the when you moved out, the demolition party, which wasn't actually a demolition party, but somehow people kind of thought that it was.
Yeah, that
it's just assumed when you're moving out of a place and it's about to get demolished.
Like that rundown.
Yeah, we told everyone, don't tell anyone it's like a demolition party. But people were like, oh, what's happening? You're moving out. And it was like, oh, yeah, they're knocking it down. And they'll be like, oh, whoops. and then it got pretty crazy. But because we had we moved into another house owned by the same landlord. So we had to have some cordial.
Just leave it completely ruined.
Yeah, completely destroyed it. But what happened was the shed got destroyed, the jam room got destroyed, half of the back of the house. It was like demolished.
I wasn't there. I think I was overseas.
Mm.
Were you on tour or just on a holiday?
Randomly, in the first year of us seeing each other, I went overseas for 3 months. My sister had a baby and, her partner wasn't around. He works on boats and stuff. So I went and just helped her with the baby for 3 months.
Right.
And that must have been during that whole period because, that I don't remember that.
But, yeah, cool house. 6 Hope Street. Now it's apartments and on the bottom is a laundromat called Soap in the City, which I think is really good.
Yeah. So what year did that happen anyway? I feel like it wasn't that long ago. It was early 2010s or something.
Yeah, it must be 2011, 2012.
Yeah.
And then,
2010
or 11. 2010 maybe, yeah. Yeah, that would make sense, 2010, 2011 that it got knocked down. But, good shack.
Yeah. Then moved into another rundown property. Yeah. Owned by the same slumlord on Nicholson Street.
Yeah.
Which was also good.
Yeah.
Had a few shows there as well.
Yeah.
Backyard gigs.
So at that point, you guys were seeing each other for about a year, you said.
Mm.
Something like that.
So when did you actually start making music together then? Or what was the situation around you guys starting to jam?
It took a while, I reckon, because you were in heaps of bands. We started Terry in 2015. And that would have been our first band together.
Have Terry talk about Terry in 2015.
There you go.
Yeah. But also that was the year you went on Dick Diver tour around the States and maybe Total Control tour?
Double drop.
In the States as well?
Yeah.
There was one that I was there that Total Control played. I can't believe you did 2 circuits.
Laps. Psycho.
Well, they're 2 different-ish really bad. Scenes.
Yeah, it's totally.
So at least you get a little bit of a different experience with each one.
Cleveland, definitely. I was because every other time we'd played with Straitjacket or UV Race, Total Control, we'd played Now That's Class. And then with Dick Diver, I'm like, what, there's a venue that's not Now That's Class in Cleveland? What the hell?
Did you get a hot dog?
Yeah, we got a hot dog and it was everything was so civil.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, this is not Cleveland.
Yeah,
isn't
no, that? Definitely.
It's, yeah.
Yeah, they have pinball machines and they have this list and you just tick off all the condiments and all the shit that you want.
It was so
pretty
good.
Dope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the gig at the hot dog shop like?
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
The people come?
There was a few heads in the room. Not many, but what's his name from Nine Shock's other band?
Do you mean Steve Peffer?
Steve's other band.
Homo Stupids?
No, it was...
Pleasure Leftists.
Pleasure Leftists. Yeah. Yeah, that was good.
They were there.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Was Greg Bailey there?
Oh, yeah. He were, he's, was UV Race's spiritual leader for a while. Him and Tim Scott, yeah.
Was he a tour driver?
He drove a little bit, not too much. He kind of moved to Australia in the late 2000s and was really into like Oz Rock and UV Race. And yeah. He also has a bunch of G.G. Allin tattoos.
All right.
And used to roadie for the Murder Junkies. And, yeah.
So what was the first tour you guys did together? This was 2015 we're talking about this, but was it before that or a bit after that?
We went to New Zealand maybe in 2016, 2015, 2016.
But I came to the States for one of the tours and met you at the end and we went to Mexico.
Yeah.
Ah, nice.
And that's kind of where Terry
was born because we went with Zephyr and Xanthi.
It sounds like an exhausting year for you. Like, I mean, in terms of all the tours and stuff.
Yeah, I just overdid it. Which is fine.
Yeah.
And it's like too much of a good thing.
So something I wanted to ask you, Al, in terms of just like the range of like genres that you've played in over like the last 14 years, what did you find in hardcore and doing Straitjacket that you also found years later in doing a completely different sound? Like what was like the thing that tied it together?
Riffs, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Riffs. Yeah, just riffs. I don't know. If
good riff is all you need.
Yeah, good riffs.
That's a t-shirt slogan, right?
Yeah. I think it's like Straitjacket's quite like powerful and, you know, energetic, but I think maybe could be, you know, there's other ways to be maybe power, you know.
To express yourself.
Express yourself and kind of get through what you're talking about and kind of comes back to your first question, why do you do music? I think it's kind of to express something that you can't really do because I'm too awkward at talking or too, not educated enough.
That's not true at all.
But I think it's that's the thing. Where music can break those boundaries. And it's like, I think also like what you get from collaborating. I remember, you know, the first time I brought a riff to Straitjacket, I was only like 17 or something. And they were like, that's cool. Oh, cool riff. And then it was like, we made a song around it and built something on it. Or like the first time I contributed something to a Straitjacket song, I was like, whoa, that was cool. We've just created something. We've just built something. And now people are going to maybe jump off the stage to it and, have a mosh. That's cool.
Yeah,
but I think that's still the same feeling of like collaborating now with whatever band. It's like just get so jacked hearing somebody playing a riff and being like, how's this sound? And like maybe it makes it better. But who knows? It's just like, it's pretty fun.
That's a great answer because it totally makes sense. Would you feel the same way in the music that you make?
I think as well, like making music for me, because I've always been like a really kind of shy person and to have to like literally go on stage shaking and like just do it and like but have so much fun. But yeah, like it's weird how it's kind of changed like how I can kind of perceive myself and stuff as well, just having fun doing all of that. And the collaborative thing, definitely, it's just a really good time, isn't it, when you like write a song with someone or a bunch of people.
Does it just feel like an extension of your relationship to be able to do that with each other?
I think as well, and like sometimes I find with Terry, all the bands, but like with Terry, like we can get like a new song and we can start playing it and like we're just so used to each other now because we've done so many tours and stuff, like we can just start playing so quickly and easily and it's so effortless or something, like it's really cool. Zephyr and Xanthi, they moved to Sydney, they're both from there, and I think they're pretty settled there now, but we still want to like keep doing stuff, but it will probably just be at a like a you know, we probably won't be able to get together and play shows. I mean, to be honest, I think like if COVID hadn't have happened, we probably would have played shows because they do come down a lot and we always love going to Sydney. They were here over Christmas and we had a couple of jams and we've got like a bunch of songs. So like when we can see each other a bit more, when probably we'll have like a new record, but just whether when that will kind of be.
We've got like 10 songs.
Right.
That we've jammed and recorded demos of.
Well, you just haven't really made a plan to move ahead with them.
I haven't had enough time to like play them, but we were sending each other demos and stuff. And then when we got together recently, we just ran through them all. But yeah, long distance bands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think like we were kind of doing that at the start as well, where it's like when the band started, we were kind of doing home demos and sending them to each other because I think we were all getting into just recording ourselves a little bit. So it made us, you know, experiment with recording ourselves, which was fun.
What, are you good at it now? Do you feel
I like it.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it too.
Mikey recorded the last Terry record though down at
Sorrento Surf Club.
Yeah.
Beach Shack.
Nice.
Yeah.
I would do that just to be able to put that on my record.
Totally.
There was that time like in the early 2010s where everyone was trying to get you to be like Australian of the Year.
Yeah.
Someone started a Facebook?
Yeah, Facebook.
Yeah, they did. Was that just something where it was just like everyone was behind it for like a hot second and then it kind of fizzled out?
I think it was a piss take. Well, I thought at first I was like accusing everyone around me. I was like, you're such a bastard. Who did this?
Well, Who did you think was accusing Dick Diver?
I was like 100% sure that Rupert from Dick Diver
was
had
it?
Done it. No. It was
It was just like a fan, like a guy that really liked the music, wasn't it?
Yeah, from Geelong Way.
Well, rolling into that as well, where is that question?
It was really embarrassing, the Australian of the Year thing I was trying to say. Yeah.
People liked it though.
People loved it.
It was funny. It was pretty funny.
It was funny.
Yeah. I think it was around the same time is when the term like doll wave started to get thrown around. Can you remember like first hearing about it, like what bands you were playing in?
Someone wrote a whole article about Doll Wave that started with School of Radiant Living and we were like,
really?
Because we were like, we're not Doll Wave. Like maybe like that they hadn't really researched that much, like didn't know that me and Harriet were from New Zealand and stuff. I don't know. But anyway.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You have lots of theories about Dal Wave, all the different like areas. Please go into them. Waves, or what do you call it?
Yeah. Waves. The Dal Wave waves.
No, what do you call it? Oh, no.
Post Dal Wave. Stage. What do I call it? I don't know what I call it.
I can't remember. Job seeker wave. Proto Dal Wave.
Proto Dal Wave.
Is like, Marky hates this. We always say the eddy current.
He's like, bullshit, we are not. I was like, look at the fucking Apple playlist. You're on the
Dal Wave
playlist. You're number one.
Wait, is that like a Spotify playlist made there by is, Spotify?
Yeah. It's on something. I can't remember, but someone sent it to me recently and eddy current right up the top.
Yeah.
Who else?
Panel of judges pretty influential on the Dal Wavers. Because I think the first ones were like that they said were Radiant Living, but Scott and Charlene's.
Yeah.
Bitch Prefect.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Twerps and Dick Diver.
Yeah.
Courtney Barnett's probably Stadium Dal Wave. Yeah.
Made it.
Yeah.
No longer Dal Wave.
But that was a funny thing. It was like when it came out, I was like, fuck, this is the first time in my life I've had a job. Like, and it wasn't the band. I'm like, I'm just not on the Dal and this Dal Wave thing's
come
up. Shouldn't
technically like cross punk be like Dal Wave?
Well, that's the thing. When it came out, I think Melbourne band Cunts were like, years later, Mackie told me, he was like, yeah, that was bullshit. Like, we were on the Dal. Our genre should have been called Dal Wave. I'm like, it's true.
That and also, like, I feel like Kitchen's Floor, like Eternal Soundcheck kind of sound.
Big time. It was just weird. It was just like, for something that I thought the sound that they were describing, I thought sounded so polished in a way.
Mm.
Like having come from like going to crust punk gigs. Like, from 16, keep on, continue to go.
Yeah.
It's like, I was like, this is not Dal Wave, what you're saying. Even though it was a bit like looking internal at topics of, Australian history and, modern Australian identity. I guess if that's all they're going to call Dal Wave, fine. It's a funny
name.
Because
you kind of think like some of the bands had lyrics that were kind of maybe a bit like that, but like Dick Diver didn't really. I guess it's kind of like everyday life-y lyrics.
Which I think is
Australian accent.
You call it like, that's more just like Australiana as opposed to like, Dal Wave. Yeah, but I can understand more like Scott and Charlene's Wedding being Dal Wave because talking about being in Melbourne, being upset and stuff like that, makes a bit more sense for that sort of stuff.
Yeah, totally. We did have a song. Dick Diver had a song called New Start Again, though.
Oh, yeah.
So that could have been the,
That's everybody's that's everybody's COVID song when they lost their job and had to go back on.
Job seeker again. Yeah.
Tell me about Hidiotic. Have you done anything on Hidiotic recently? Or like why did you start doing Hidiotic?
Well, I didn't start it.
Ah, right.
Georgia. UV Race started it. She put out a Constant Mongrel tape. The first Constant Mongrel tape is a Hidiotic release,
right?
And that's when she was trying to court. What do you say?
She was a Courtin' Hugh.
She was Courtin' Hugh. So she was like,
I want to do your band.
Can I have this UV Race money to do this release? And I love it. That's awesome. Yeah, do it. And then nothing really happened for a while. Mm. And then I was like, pretty good name.
Mm.
Maybe we should later on. I forget what the next thing. Oh, maybe in like 2014, 2013, went to New Zealand. Could have been 2012.
Mm.
Let's call it 2012. Went to New Zealand.
Did we go there that early?
Yeah, we meet the Fockers and went for a wedding and we met
Ruth's wedding.
Yeah, met Type. This guy named Type in Wellington, who was bass player of a great band called Terror of the Deep.
My friend Ben Buchanan, like, burnt us a CD. He was like, oh, you'll love this band.
Mm.
But we, got that CD. I was like, this is awesome. And I was like, these guys would be really good in Melbourne with the Dal Wave affinity, so to speak. But I just thought, they sounded like Velvetsy influence and heavy Kiwi influence as well. I was like, cool, maybe this is something.
Kind of psychedelic leaning or something. I don't know. What is that?
Like, yeah, big time. It's cool. But, yeah, ask them, put out a tape.
So you've just continued it on after that?
Yeah.
And you just do it, like, whenever there's something that you like or, like, whenever there's something you've done?
Yeah. Mm. I think then did Snake, the Snake tape, which I was like, this isn't good. Maybe I shouldn't.
That was 2013.
I think I've got my timelines all right.
I've got it all here.
But I think I was like, oh, cool. Maybe I'll just do it tape. Don't want to impose on anyone else. And had done the Terror of the Deep tape, and that was fun. Knew how to
press
tapes. And then I think, what was the next one? I can't remember what else came. I think.
No, I can't. I literally cannot think of any band.
Calamari Girls.
Oh, Calamari Girls. Yeah.
Or Primo, one of those.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I know that maybe the people in that band, besides Tom in Calamari Girls, hadn't really done releases. And I'm not sure. And they were such a good band. I was like, do you want to do something? Mm. They're so good. Such a good band. But yeah. I was never like, oh, I need this on the label.
Yeah.
It's like, just organically, I want, kind of happen. Yeah.
It's like friends helping friends, like friends collaborating with friends. It's another way to collaborate that's not being in a band, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just wanted it to get out there. And I was already going around to shops every single weekend, you know, peddling either UV Race, Eastlink, you know, other idiotic stuff. So I was going around all the time. I was like, well, let's just keep this going. Keep this. Make sure it gets out.
You enjoyed putting the tapes together and stuff, I think.
Yeah. I used to make mix CDs for Hidiotic up until maybe 2 years ago. Mix CDs with two songs from each band and take them to radio. Oh,
radios.
It's a smart idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was like pretty cool. But
yeah.
What do you call that? A sampler.
Sampler, yeah. And I was like, I told Tim one time, I was like, did you get the fucking CD? And he's like, what? No, nobody checks their boxes. I was like, what? But then people were playing it, so some people check their boxes.
Well, that's
do you?
Well, I didn't even know. I don't know if I have a box. It's been like 2 years. I have no idea. That's the thing. Like, I feel like in the past people would like send you stuff, and now like I spend so much time just looking for stuff to play to make it interesting. You know, people don't send out stuff anymore. It's just like online, and then you just got to like – do your research and shit, which is fine. It's just things have changed a lot.
Mm.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Were you in Constant Mongrel from the start, or did you join at some point?
I think I joined, because I don't think that first tape I wasn't on, was I?
No.
Was that before you guys knew each other, this tape, or?
I think we knew each other. That's the start. Blossoming.
I think Georgia and Hugh were seeing each other at that point, and he must have just asked if I joined the band. Mm. And I was just like, yeah. I was like, sick, be in another band. And that was really fun. Like, I think the first music was really kind of garagey and stuff, but it was kind of fun to play because of that. And we, like, oh my God, our shows always so much just fell apart. It was just such a scene. Things would always go wrong. But yeah, so I think that would have been like just after the tape, because I remember listening to the tape and I was like, oh yeah, cool.
So you're there from early on?
Pretty early on, yeah. And then we did the first record. And then we got, I think they were friends with Taco League. They went
to Perth. Yeah, I had that tape.
And did a show with Taco League and met Andrew that way. And then one of the songs on that first record has Andrew singing on it. And then he was just in the band from then, I think. I don't know. Did he move here?
I think he moved to Melbourne. Have to, sure. Yeah.
He did, but yeah. And then we were like, oh, we'll just get him in the band. And then it all came together. Beautiful. And then slowly we started poaching other people, like Tom Hardesty, and got Alan on sax.
Ah, right.
Make the super group.
Are you still in the band as like a sax player?
Yeah, I think. I just go when I'm asked. He always
he's like in the band officially, but you play all the shows, so I think you're technically
much. You're a constant mongrel side piece.
Yeah.
So does life look a lot different from like years of doing like these bands and these tours and stuff, and then COVID hit and now we're coming out the other side? Do things just look a lot different to like what you thought they would look like maybe 2 years ago looking forward in terms of music and stuff?
I guess we were just so used to like playing so regularly.
Mm.
Like we would be playing like at least like once a week, one of us, and sometimes three times a week or something.
Mm.
We just got so used to that. But it was almost a little bit I don't know if we would have really been able to keep that up.
Mm.
So COVID was kind of like in a way a nice break for me personally.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's strange not seeing all the people that you're so used to seeing every week and stuff.
Mm.
Like I don't know if I ever really look ahead that far to think about what, I mean, I guess we always thought that we'd be probably like touring once a year, like we would usually do with one of our bands or and that kind of thing. And that's just not really in the future anymore. So not for a little while anyway.
Yeah. I think with the touring stuff, it's like we toured every year.
We've been so lucky. We've done so many lucky tours.
Mm.
So super privileged to be able to travel with music and play pretty much to every single year for the last 13 years. That's like
insane.
Nobody else, you know, well, I guess like musicians get to do that, but not everyone. So feel really lucky for that. But it's also like you kind of go and it becomes like a routine. Routine sounds drab, but it's like it becomes like a
just something that's like expected.
Exactly. Kind of thing. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay, we finished one tour. It's like, well, we did Leipzig this year. You know what else is good? Fucking Dresden. We're doing Dresden next year. It's like, cool, let's start like arranging the new records.
And then your 10 other bands are just like, oh, but we're going on tour. True, and you're like, all right, let me just fit this in. And then work's just like, you got to work.
Yeah,
you're working all in between. But then also I feel like you don't necessarily like change anything about your life because you're kind of like that's what you're going to do.
Mm.
Like you know that for like a month that year, like that's what you need to save money for and, you know.
Mm.
So it's like I guess in a way like COVID's really kind of changed things up and it's been, awful for a lot of people, but I was kind of working throughout and stuff. So for me, it was just like a strange, eerie kind of break from my usual life.
Hmm.
And that isolation, I think, was just so hard for a lot of people, for so many people. And makes sense.
Yeah. But like, I mean, time moves and now we're like almost a year up until that point and there are shows happening again.
Mm.
And saying which, are you guys playing any shows soon? You're playing. I got a ticket to your show at Max Watt.
Primo, Exec, Alien Nose Job.
Mm.
We're playing that?
Yep.
We played our first Sleeper and Snake gig last week.
Oh, yeah.
Last week at Nighthawks.
Who was that with?
Brickhead.
Mm.
Yeah, that was really fun. I was kind of like, oh, it'll be really weird because, like, obviously social distancing, there's not going to be able to be anyone up there. And it was like, oh, this seems quite squished.
It felt the same.
No, for Nighthawks, really? Wait, so it was Nighthawks. What was the capacity there?
40 or something?
Yeah. 40 or 50. And then it was like, you can't fit more than. What's the capacity up there anyway? 100? And then I was like, no, this just feels really packed.
Yeah.
But people weren't squished up the front.
No.
So I think it was more like you know, how people just tend to kind of clump together or something because no one wants to be like really close to the stage, where if people just kept coming in, it would have filled up if it was full capacity.
Yeah.
You've got to tell people to move up, like those hardcore bands.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Everybody come to the front. Yeah.
I was too shocked to be alive and on stage to even think about something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm always conflicted by move up the front.
Yeah.
Because with Straight Jacket, it'd be like, move up the front.
You have a gag about it, don't and you?
Yeah, I do it with Terry sometimes as a gag. Is it? But it was, I'm just like.
Pretty much that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I say plenty of room at the front. I was like, I don't know what to say. But like with the Straight Jacket, it's always like, move up the front. It's like, surely, like when people move up the front now, it's like whoever moves up the front's going to get knocked over.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, they know what they're in for.
Tell me about your visa, by the way, because we were talking about it a bit before, but did you say you're actually about to get permanent residency here or?
Well, I kind of have been thinking about it for a while.
Yeah.
Like, and obviously as a New Zealander, I can live here just as a resident and can have Medicare and stuff. So I'm obviously like really lucky in all those regards.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I just like know that I'm going to stay here permanently and just kind of want to just have that safety net of like actually being an Australian, I guess, and be able to vote and be part of society, not a second class kind of like.
Get deported.
Could get deported if I got arrested at a protest or something. So yeah. I'll just, yeah, like I think it's just maybe like my time. So I looked into permanent residency, which is like heaps cheaper, but you have to earn over a certain amount of money for like 4 or 5 years, which I don't think I've quite hit that threshold, especially like playing in bands hard, when you're like away a lot and stuff. Yeah. So because I was like, okay, that's not going to happen. So I think I'm going to maybe do the partner visa, which is expensive, but
so you're doing the I've
always just been able to live here.
Yeah.
And then, and in a way I've kind of always been like, I don't want to be in Australia. Sorry, everyone. But I was like, I'm fucking New Zealand. That's good.
So when you came here, there was like a plan to go back. Like you're like, I'm here, but
no.
Yeah.
I just came here so like I think I'd like pretty much woke up hungover and bought a ticket. You know, like I was no planning.
And look where you are.
No idea. Yeah. Met this fine specimen sitting next to me. And now I'm staying.
In an agnostic front t-shirt.
And some mambo thongs. Yeah.
They're reggae colours.
Yeah. No, I didn't think I would stay here long term, but I do really like Melbourne. I think it's just, you know, you just become part of the furniture and you just, yeah.
Have you ever considered moving to New Zealand? Has that been a conversation?
We've talked about it.
I say it all the time. I was like, well, do you want to move to New Zealand? Sweet. Let's just do it.
You like, recently, because no, I was like, oh, should I become Australian? You're like, can I then become a New Zealander? New Zealand's awesome. I do really love it.
New Zealand's beautiful.
The reality of moving back there, I don't know. I don't know. I guess it's just that thing like you move somewhere else and then all your friends in life are here. Mm-hmm. And your whole family's here. And we usually would be able to go back to New Zealand like once a year or something. It's like relatively cheap certain times of year. And so I can see all my family. So it's not usually a problem, but this year it's obviously been a bit of a problem.
So speaking about touring, you've both done your fair amount of tours. Can you tell me that, like, whenever someone asks you about tours, what's the thing that, like, you always think about? With all the tours that you've done, all the places that you've been, it's, like, always, like, the memory that pops into your head about touring.
It's the God, was it in Geneva when we stayed in that squat and they put us in the ceiling? I don't know.
Oh, for some reason, toilet.
I always think of the, just that whole tour was really funny and there was that guy with the harmonica that turned up. I don't know. I always think of the funny things. I never think of like, oh, this gig was really good. I always think of like the trauma and like really uncomfortable moments. Yeah, I don't know. Al?
Yeah. I think
so many funny things happen on tours. Yeah, the Geneva show, like, was the one that really flashes to my mind.
I think we thought, like, Switzerland, this is one of the richest countries on the earth. So.
So we played with this band called Marauder who were really good, and they were like, oh, my God, you're staying at this place. It's really amazing. Like, they, like, led me to believe, like, it was someone's fucking parents' house that was, like, a mansion. Literally described this place as a mansion. Yes, it was, like, a big house, but it was, like, all, there were, like, pretty much, like, chickens in the fucking living room. They, like, just kept taking us up. Like, this random person was, like, up here.
Like quasi-Mordo.
And then there's just like just a hole in the ceiling with a ladder and I was like, I don't want to go up there. Like, you know, and you're so tired and you're disgusting because you've like sweated. Yeah. And
that
like
wasn't the worst part.
Just like the summer. Like,
that wasn't even bad. That was fine. It was like a mattress, which is what, it's not what you always get. It was like, I'm like, cool, a mattress. This is amazing. A mattress on a floor. I was fine with that. But then when we went down the ladder to go to the toilet,
no, I did in the night. And then there was a guy and he was just like, who, like he didn't know who I was and got really freaked out. Like they didn't even tell them that we were staying there. They just took us there and put us in the roof space.
Yeah, I think that we just got put in someone's house. That was like, it felt like imposing.
And, then Chris,
and it was.
Chris, who runs Upset the Rhythm, so he's driven us on lots of our tours because he's just like an angel. And we're always just like, you have to drive us because we don't want to try.
Because we impose, yeah.
But he slept on the couch and at some point in the night someone just like came and shone like a light in his face. There's lots of weirder ones than that, I guess.
Rude.
But that's the one that just always comes to mind for some reason. You know when you're like at a certain point of the tour, but I must have just been at a certain point of exhaustion where it was just everything was just like so traumatizing. We had lots of good times. So like Chris who drove us, like he's a real history buff, so he'd love to like take us places and then he'd be like, you know, take us to like an ancient burial chamber in Wales or something, you know, like, so it was always really fun
always
doing
good
that
stuff.
Kind of stuff. Yeah. But quite often we'd also get places like, you know, we'd be like, oh, arrive somewhere in Spain. And then like we'd have to do sound check and he'd go off and see all these like amazing things. Then he'd be come back and he'd be like, oh, I just saw blah, blah. And we'd be like, cool.
Yeah. I think sound checks is
drum,
another thing.
Just going, doom, doom.
Because we don't really sound check that much here in Melbourne. But like, I think if you're touring, you're like, you know, often like the main band or whatever. So it's like, they want you to sound check. which I'm like, oh, man. So he's getting to gigs early,
yeah.
Sound checking. Here's the top five things of tour. Sound check, looking for food.
Oh, yeah. What are we going to eat?
With Terry, because three vegetarians and a celiac, we always ate really healthy.
Well, literally every place we went had just made like a bowl of lentils. Like that was pretty much the vibe.
Yeah.
No, we did get fed really well. There was always like a lentil salad. I think that's maybe like a very French thing though.
Maybe the French shows lentil salad.
Or just like a general kind of gruel of beans or something that you'd get. France, you'd always get yummy cheeses and stuff though.
I think Greg Daly said when I was like, oh, looking forward to touring Europe one day, and he said, what, rice and shice?
What the hell is shice?
Shit.
Where was the gig where the band room was like really small and there was like a toilet right there and then they like had food set up, like, but it was like literally in the toilet, like so Brighton? Close. Oh, yeah, that was Brighton.
Andy Old? Yeah.
Like, am I hungry enough to eat this toilet food?
I think I'm a freak. I like.
You love it.
I love reveling also in you, like, other maniacs.
You love meeting people.
Yeah.
But you'll always do the hard yards of, because, you know, like everywhere you go, people want you to party and you're so partied out. And then you're just like, oh, do we push on through? But you always take it for the team and stay up chatting to the people.
I don't even feel like it's taking it for the team.
But if some of us are really tired.
Even if they're maniacs, at least they're maniacs. That's nice.
There was a good Primo Tour one where it was a little bit of like that. We were so tired and Zant had up some sort of like synthetic weed or something. It wasn't spice. No, it was, I can't remember what it was. Spice. But she like stayed up all night and like literally like when we got up in the morning, she was just a ghost, you know, and we had to get up early and go to another gig.
Yeah.
And it was just like a brutal day because we did like part of a Primo tour in the UK. We caught trains.
Yeah.
Which we were like, that'll be fun.
Wait, why did you catch trains?
Why did we do that? Yeah. I don't know. It was just also like a good idea. Maybe we were just like, oh, that'll be great. Really annoying to move gear onto trains.
Yeah, just running for a train, like everyone's just like holding an
getting
amp.
Getting off in some places because it's suddenly just all these people get on as you get closer to the city and then you're like, fuck, we've got to get like guitars and stuff and get off. Tours are fun. But yeah, as you say, like at the time sometimes you're just like a bit alarmed by things, but in retrospect it's just so funny. And I think as well because you kind of need to like, I don't know, like maybe some people don't, but I like would drink to be able to be social at the gigs and totally. Like, and so by the end of it, you're just so worn out, but then you're also quite piss fit. So you're just like having a really good time, but then you just like crash completely when you come back to Australia. We did the last Terry tour we did was just in the UK and Ireland. Like we decided that, I think the previous one we did a longer tour and that was when we got like robbed in Belgium.
What happened with that?
We just, our van just like really mysteriously just got robbed of just our personal belongings.
Oh.
So like didn't take any guitars or anything, like just literally just took our bags
with like all passports.
Our clothes. Well, Al and I lost our passports because we were like, oh, it's like the middle of the day. It's like on a really busy
no one's
street.
Gonna do anything.
Yeah, we were like probably worse to carry them around. So we just like left them in there, got robbed, lost like just all our clothes and stuff. And then I think we missed one gig because we missed Brighton because we just couldn't get back in time because we both had to get our passports and Australia was really slow.
Mm.
I got my one pretty quickly, but Al actually came back separately on the Eurostar and we just made a London gig, which was maybe with Sharemag. Was that gig with Sharemag, that one after we got robbed?
Yeah.
But, yeah, so then the next tour we were like, let's just have a chill one. We'll just drive ourselves. And we literally just got a car that could just fit everything. And then we just, like, drove ourselves around, went on the ferry over to Dublin, Belfast. It was awesome.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that I was driving heaps, so it wasn't so much, yeah, like you say, that you could just party and then sleep in the van, which is maybe what I'd done a bit more in previous tours. But it was good. But it says the UK, like nothing is that far apart anyway. So none of the drives were like hectic. The longest one was maybe in the end when we drove back to London or something.
Did you go all the way up to like, what, Scotland, Ireland?
We went to Glasgow and Edinburgh on that one. Yeah, we did a lap.
We did a full, we didn't go higher than Glasgow. Oh, no, we went to Edinburgh, yeah.
Yeah, we and didn't then, play Wales on that trip, but we drove through it. But then we also, I think we drove there to get to Dublin, didn't we?
I don't know. Great interview. I thought you were supposed to be good at geography.
We definitely did. I just didn't want to,
push the point.
Push the point.
But yeah, played Belfast for the first time on that tour, which was really cool.
Yeah.
We got a gig somehow. How did that happen with that guy? We like bullied him into arranging a gig.
Yeah.
For us.
It's when you email, when you email someone and you're like, cool, they've put on gigs before, they've been suggested by someone else.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, I just don't do that anymore. There's nowhere you can play. And like we just like kept pushing the point.
I've got his kids, band I have to leave come early.
Out of retirement to play.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd maybe on a tweet had said, yay, I love the new record. And I was like,
or maybe he even said
click, click.
In the tweet, like, are you coming to Belfast or something? Which we were like, yeah, if you put on a gig. And then that's how it happened.
Bullied him.
Yeah.
It's a bully. Him. Classic bully the promoter.
What did you guys do during COVID? Considering you came into 2020 having an expectation of the year and things that you were going to do, and did you end up actually taking a break, or did you find it a thing where you could create without kind of having the interruption of tours and gigs and like people basically?
I think at the start of last year I was kind of like, what am I going to do this year? Like Zephyr and Xanthi have moved interstate and I've kind of spent so much the last 5 years doing Terry.
Georgia was having another baby. Moses had just had a baby.
But UV Ray still kind of would do the odd show every now and then.
I think we thought we'd finish the UV Ray sequel. That's something we thought we might do. Didn't happen.
On the movie.
Yeah.
It's in the works.
It's in the works.
So he's still tinkering away in New York.
But I think it was like almost having, I thought it would be a break because we'd be down two bands, Terry and
we just
Total
finished
Control.
The Sleeper and Snake record though, so we thought that would come out, but it came out during COVID, so you couldn't really do anything.
And besides that, I think we just worked.
Yeah.
We were kind of like staying up really late and like just eating lots of food. Like that was pretty much it. I probably started maybe drinking a little bit more than I should have.
Yeah, lucky we get along too, Amy and I. So it was like
you thought moving in was the test and COVID happened.
Ready for the partner visa now.
Yeah. Joint bank account.
Joint bank account. But yeah, what did we do?
It all went so quickly. I feel like I did nothing. At some point, like I set up a little space to like have as a studio. I was like, oh, dude, like all this painting and stuff. And then I was like, literally, it just sat there, just collecting dust.
Yeah.
Making me feel guilty. And people would be like, blame the dust. Oh, you must be doing heaps of music. And I'd be like, not really. We did a few live tours things, some more successfully than others. We did that thing that was for, like, that Third Man TV, which I don't think ever happened.
Never happened.
What was that?
Third Man Public Access.
Was it just a kind
is
of
that a
COVID
YouTube channel?
Thing?
Yeah, it's like Jack White's label.
Oh.
And,
Whoa.
You just
time.
Know the guy, though. Like, we literally were like, oh, we'll do it. Maybe the they ask, like, another band, and then we're like, oh, but have you ever heard Sleeper and Snake? We'll do it. But never really kind of eventuated.
But you did the Triple R one.
Triple R one was good.
Mm. We tried to do a live release of one of our songs, which went really pear-shaped. And, like, the whole song, we didn't realise, but it was overblowing so much that it sounded like some, like, really out there, like, techno song. And people were like, love your new direction. And at the end, we're like, go up and look, and we're like, how was it? And they're just like, you're going to have to do that again.
Oh, no.
Text from Coco. Yeah, that didn't work.
You're fired.
Shit. Hey, that could be your new direction, 2021.
Also did also jammed a few times with Alex McFarlane.
Oh, cool.
Like 5 times. Mm. Got a few realms in the can. So we might do like a tape.
What's the name?
Chateau.
It's very post-neo band.
Escape to the Chateau.
That's not out in the world yet, though, is it? You're still mixing.
Hobbies galore.
Yeah.
Or Hidiotic.
What about like one side from each band? Like, yeah. I mean, label.
Yeah, my side sounds like slightly muffled. And the photocopying's really bad.
Just like wonky edges.
Keeping that punk aesthetic going.
No, all Hidiotic releases are up to scratch.
Yeah. All right. Well, so it's 2021 now. Things are starting to open back up. What do you guys have going on at the moment and like for the next couple months?
You've got a couple of gigs.
Got a couple of gigs. But everything's kind of like we didn't even know if Xanthi was going to make it down for those gigs until literally like a few days ago. So it's all a little bit like have to wait with the borders and stuff. So tensions are a little high with that. But I think hopefully things are smoothing out now.
We've got a whole Terry record to that record. We've got to
figure out.
Probably a whole Total Control record to do. You'd have
no Primo jams. Primo, I've got some new songs, but it's just whether we can get together to like work on them. But
yeah,
Vio and Xanthi have a really good system where they kind of like send each other things and then we all like kind of get together and work on them. But we'll just see what happens with that.
We've got one song.
Might play one of the new songs at these shows.
Yeah.
Oh, Mouse and Me.
The Mouse and Me, that's a really good song.
I think Vio wrote it when she was living by herself during lockdown and there was just like a mouse in the house. It's really good. I think I literally am not making any plans. Hopefully go to New Zealand at some point, but that's like the only thing that I'm kind of like banking and working towards when I'm allowed.
As soon as Europe gets the vaccine, I'm going to help Carl Frog book a tour because he's a bit useless with...
He wants to go to...
other parts of Europe.
Yeah.
But he's stuck in Tallinn.
People think that Carl Frog was L,
yeah,
which I like all these conspiracy theories.
Because you put out the tape on Hidiotic, right? I remember you coming into Lulu's and dropping off a couple copies.
Yeah, but he's over there, so we've got to get him out in the world.
I guess, like, I mean, you guys have been in a bunch of different bands over a pretty long period of time. And I'm sure in that time you've been pretty involved with, like, your friends and the music going on. But, like, starting to see younger people now coming up and making music and post-COVID, what do you see in like maybe the next couple of years moving forward in terms of like the sound of music or like do you have...
Because we're the older people now.
I guess. Like, I mean, even I would... Like, I'm... Mm. Yeah. Like, do you feel like something like things that you've done in music has like made a sound that younger people are like making in Australia as well, you know, like.
I think it's hard. Just
pondering it.
Because it's like, well, I guess we can only be inspired by, you know, the music that we've created. So maybe they've heard the same stuff. Maybe they've just skipped a generation or whatever.
Weird, like the scene in Melbourne, we kind of know this far, but there's so many bands everywhere, but I have no clue who they are and stuff. But like we do kind of keep quite insular with like the people that we know and stuff. Al's always like, oh yeah, let's play with this band that, you know, young, we've never heard of, and I'll just be like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah. Amy's like, what if really they steal my wallet?
I've been to Europe.
I'm just like, oh, I don't trust these young people.
No, I
don't think I know enough about, like, I'm pretty bad with stuff like that. Like, I know some people will maybe, like, keep more in touch with music scene and stuff, but I'm pretty bad.
Yeah, there's so much great new stuff, and I can't wait to hear more. I think, yeah.
We get really good, like, Steph working for the Triple J Unearthed. She always, has these, like, gems of, like, amazing musicians from around Australia that she'll like put us on to.
I look forward to hearing what's next though. I don't know, even I feel like maybe I know we're saying like, oh, we're older, we're disconnected, but
Third wave.
I know we're fourth. I know we're first wave doll wave, and we're talking like fourth wave doll wave now. But it's like bands, you know, where people are a bit younger than us, but we are such good friends. We see each other all the time.
Yeah.
We hang out and they are a bit younger and we play with them all the time.
I was going to ask you to name some, like, but just
like. Well, I don't know. Even like Parsnip or someone like Parsnip who.
Yeah, I always just forget that people are younger. I still think that I'm fucking 17. Like, I really, truly have never, like, grown up enough to, like, you know.
Parsnip, like Zach from Execution, like.
Yeah. Much, his tape is great.
So good. Yeah, yeah. It's like, and he's like so much younger. Like,
he's like 19. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's amazing.
You'll be like, on. Name a band and I like can't think of any. Yeah. I'm just like what were those people, what is that? We're playing at that Noisy Ritual gig and then you were like, oh, because it has to be like a kind of quiet band that we're playing with, and then we were trying to think of bands and then he was just like, just think of bands that you like, and I was just like, oh my god, I don't know. Like, oh god, we were trying to get Oscar Perry to play with us on his new tape. Oscar Perry. If he doesn't play.
That tape is amazing, the one off Hobbies Galore.
It's so good.
Well, I think that's pretty much it. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us. Pretty fun.
That was really fun.
I'm glad. Back down, boy. The saving room. Check his brain. There's no content. A big thanks to Amy and Al for coming in to chat, and a big thanks to you for listening. Additional content can be found on the episode page at litmus.media, where you can also contact me if you have any questions or suggestions. Another interview episode is out next week, so stay tuned to the Modern Australian Underground.
Litmus Media.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.